you spend £200 million. I'm Sorrel, and I'm back for season two of the insanely lavish Rich Beyond My Wildest Dreams podcast, where hilarious guests get their hands on an imaginary £200 million jackpot on Euro Millions from the National Lottery.
I would buy tickets to go and see Backstreet Boys in the Sphere. I'd buy the Sphere? What are we talking about?
The bougier, the better.
Turned into a lunatic with all this money. Europe. Beach.
So get ready for confetti cannons, champagne, giant checks, and some of the most outrageous ways a person could possibly spend a £200 million fortune.
Jacuzzi karaoke.
Jacuzzi
karaoke.
You can get that Euro Millions feeling every Friday by searching for Rich Beyond My Wildest Dreams on all podcasting apps, YouTube, Instagram, and TikTok.
Good morning, everybody. Thank you for joining us. Welcome to another episode of Drop in the Gloves. I'm glad you're here, Tim. I'm glad you're here, too.
Do you mean that? Do you really mean that?
I do. I really, really do. It's going to be a good show. We're winding down the playoffs, Tim. I'm just going to jump right into it because we don't have a lot of time. We try to keep these episodes nice and tight. And in the playoffs, there's games every night, and it feels like we miss so much. I write notes after every game, and then they become obsolete because there's another game already been played. I had some stuff for the Canes and Capitals. The next thing you know, they play last night, and everything's washed out with this latest game. But one thing I did notice, Tim, the cream is rising to the top. We're getting down to the nitty-gritty. We're down to eight teams, soon to be whittled down to four, and it's intense games. It is very, you know, important games. Game four is usually the most important game of a series. Some would argue game three, game five, depending. But just last night and the night before that, there was huge games with massive Stanley Cup implications. Toronto, Florida, and Edmonton, and Vegas. Four, you could say, Stanley Cup favorites. And what I noticed with those games was the old guard, the conference champions from last year, the old dogs, they showed what it takes to win. They took these new kids, they took the up-and-coming kids, the Toronto Maple Leafs and the Vegas Golden Knights, if you can call Vegas the old guard. But the two teams from last year in the Stanley Cup Finals just showed you what it takes to be champions. Games they needed to win, I would say Florida desperately needed to win that game, and Edmonton did not want to go back tied 2-2, giving Vegas Golden Knights home ice advantage for the last three games of the series. And they dominated, Tim. It wasn't even close, both of those games. And you would think, oh, well, you know, they're playing bad teams. No, Toronto is a legit team. Vegas won the Cup a few years ago. And they completely controlled the game from start to finish. And the only reason both games were close at all, in my opinion, were the goaltenders. I think Aiden Hill played terrific, even though he was getting battered and bruised and ran and stuck and just frustrated all night long. I still think he played really, really solid. And Joseph Woll was the only one who got on the bus to go to the game. Like he was absolutely fantastic. Whereas every other Toronto Maple Leafs player was completely invisible. So it was just nice to see the old guard just standing up and going, you know, this is how you play. This is what it takes to win in the playoffs.
Yeah, before we get into the games, it's a good point. Last year, I just pulled up the last year's playoff bracket. The Western Conference final was Edmonton-Dallas, and it feels like we're headed that way again. And the Eastern Conference was Florida and the New York Rangers, who eliminated the Hurricanes, and it feels like we're going to see Florida Canes this year. So, yeah, I think that's a totally valid point.
Yeah, and then you always hear the cliche, and you go back to the old dynasties, whether it was Chicago back in my era, or the Edmonton Oilers, or the New York Islanders, or whoever it was, and you have to learn from your mistakes. You have to figure out what it takes. But in Vegas's case, they know what it takes. I just feel like you're running into a team with the Edmonton Oilers who has figured it out. They have learned from their past mistakes in years past. They have built this team, and we'll get into it in a second, but they're just good. You know, their goaltender's struggling, and in years past, they would try to outscore a team. I remember they would play the LA Kings or the Calgary Flames, and the scores would be 8-7. It'd be 7-5, and it would just be a shootout. They know they can't win a cup that way. So now instead of just trying to run and gun and get 6-7 goals because you know your goaltender's terrible, they scale back their play a little bit. They come back to the house. They don't overexert themselves in the offensive zone. It's a completely different style of play to them. And it's working. It's absolutely working. And then you turn the page and you go to the Florida Panthers. They are getting outskilled by Toronto. Toronto by far has more talent, top to bottom, even on the back end. So what do? They muck it up. They get Toronto to play in the mud. They make it hard from zone to zone to zone. And now look what's happened. Everybody's talking about Sam Bennett. Everybody's trying to take shots at Barkov. Everybody's trying to get revenge. Everybody's still worried about Anthony Stolarz. And it's Florida's game now. Toronto is completely checked out of what they are good at. And Florida now has them in a street fight. Going into game 5, all everyone's talking about is retribution. What are we going to do? Oh, Tkachuk's yelling at Marner. Oh, Nyes steps in. And Owen Domi cheap shots Barkov. This is exactly where Florida wants them to be. Exactly. Ottawa tried to get Toronto in that spot. Toronto outskilled them. And they said, no, we're playing our game. Well, it's taken 3 to 4 games. We are playing in the mud, everybody. This is a street fight. This is exactly what the Panthers want. And this is it's just neat to see. Everybody knew they wanted to do it. Toronto knew it was going to happen. And now here we are. And now here we are exactly where we knew we'd end up. I don't know.
It's Mariano Rivera. Like, 2 strikes on you, the whole stadium knows the slider's coming, and you still can't do anything about it. This is Florida. Like, they're playing exactly into their hands. And I was thinking about this after the game the other night, because the longer the series goes on and the way that it's going, and we'll get down into the game a little bit, I almost feel like Toronto doesn't have a chance, because Florida is just like ramping up as the series go on. And they've always been a team in this group of players that gets better as the series goes on. It works against the Canes. It works against the Bruins. It worked against the Rangers. Like, the longer this goes on, the chippier it's going to get, because you're playing more games. There's more opportunities to the extracurricular activities. And this is exactly Florida's MO. And they'll beat 2 out of 3 in 5, 6, and 7 every single time. So, yeah, this is not looking good for Toronto.
And I just feel everybody knows since the start of time. It's known when the playoffs starts, the whistles go away. The NHL can do whatever they want. Oh, we're going to call it the same way in the playoffs. We're going to keep the same standards. We're going to be consistent with what we've called in the first game of this season to the last game of the season. That's how we're going to call it. No ifs, ands, or buts. Referees are human. They don't want to be criticized. And they don't want to decide a series. And they know at any given moment, calling a penalty will decide a series. With that being said, all the people bitching and moaning about the playoffs and Florida Panthers and taking cheap shots and Sam Bennett and Tkachuk and all these other guys taking runs at Marner, Bennett with Stolarz and previous series. You can do it too. Like, that's why we'll get to the Domi thing in a second. I'm not mad at what Max Domi did. I think it's perfectly fine. It was dirty.
Let me jump in real quick. Just on the reffing and the calling of the game, this stat was going around the other day, and I wanted to get your take on it, because I can't wrap my head around how I feel about it. Maybe I don't have any opinions, but I wonder if you do. The Maple Leafs in the playoffs are 0-9 when the game is called by the referee, Wes McCauley. Do you give that any credence, or is that just one of those things that feels like it's meaningful, but it's actually not?
No, I think there definitely is something there. Because referees don't like certain teams. They don't like certain coaches. And players interact with referees all the time. So if you're a ref and you're like, these guys are the worst, the absolute worst. And I've seen it and you've heard it on tape. And referees have talked about it after they retired. They have a bias. I know it's not supposed to be, but they're human. And if you're chirping somebody, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners play hockey, if you're in a men's league game and one team is constantly on the ref, you're terrible. Call this. That was offside. What are you doing? Get in the play. Look at he's holding. He's hooking. The referee banks that. And the next time your team does something borderline, he's going to give you a penalty because you've been riding him all day long. And I think that's what's happening with Wes McCauley and the Toronto Maple Leafs. They're just constantly in his ear. And this is all, you know, alleged stuff. I don't know anything concrete, but it's 0-9.
0-9. Yeah,
like that's a big number. It would be interesting to go into those 9 games and see the penalty disparity. If they do get more calls, if so, you know, break it down. I don't have that kind of time, let alone that kind of just effort to put into that. But yeah, they've lost 9 games. But again, it's the Toronto Maple Leafs. They always seem to be on the wrong side of the penalty share. whereas they're getting more penalty kills and power play advantages just because they seem to be, I don't know, they score quick and then refs want to give them, the other team, power plays to catch up because they want a good, entertaining game. But going back to my main point, I just think the big boys are asserting their dominance. And they're saying, this is our series. This is how it's going to be played. Keep up or just beat it. And let's start with Edmonton Vegas, because last night was a huge game for the Vegas Golden Knights. They needed to win this game. You cannot go down 3-1 to the Edmonton Oilers and expect to win. It won't happen. And Edmonton went out, Tim. Stuart Skinner in net. Big deal. Kevin Picard injured. He hasn't played the last two games. Stuart Skinner hasn't had a win in these playoffs. His last win was game 82 of the regular season. So he is still just mind. I'm not going to say a word, but he needs to get a good game under his belt. And he got one. He played solid. He played absolutely perfect hockey. He didn't let in any beach balls. He was positionally sound. He wasn't letting in an overtime goal. The memes were just, felt bad for the guy. With that 0.4 second, it wasn't overtime. The 0.4 second goal he let in versus Riley Smith, and he's nowhere to be found. Like, what are you doing? Just stay in your net. You're going to save that puck. But he played great. Vegas Golden Knights, pretty pedestrian, Tim. Your life's on the line. What are you doing if you're this team, a Stanley Cup pedigree team, and you show up and you lay an egg like that? What was it, the Oilers imposing their will, Tim, or was it the Vegas Golden Knights just kind of laying an egg?
I think it was a little bit of both. I think Vegas obviously had a huge opportunity to tie the series and even take the series lead going back to game three when you have Stuart Skinner. You think he's like, okay, he's coming in net. And what that would have been Saturday morning. It was tweeted out that Skinner got the starter's net during the practice and everyone's just flipping out. What happened to Picard? Is this a Knobloch thing? What are they doing? He's day-to-day. Hopefully he's not out for the whole series. But you think, okay, if you're Vegas, this is a huge opportunity. And you don't show up. You don't deliver. And so you get the game three win, obviously, or game four win, with that fluky goal, that overtime goal, which is just a crazy sequence. And then you have a chance to tie it up and you don't in game four. And I think a lot of credit to Skinner. And one of the things that Knobloch did was he jumbled the lines, which created a lot of advantages where you have like Draisaitl logging like a third line center and you have Perry dropping up and down the lineup and they put Kapanen up on the first line with McDavid for a couple shifts, and he's like imposing his will physically, and just it sparked a life into the team. When you have a new goalie and you have a different energy, you shake things up, and it totally threw things off for the Vegas Golden Knights, and now they have a 3-1 series lead.
Yeah, and they won't come back from this. I don't see this team winning three games in a row. They might win the next game, but gosh, if you're in Edmonton, it's you're feeling pretty good flying back to Vegas because you've played fantastic hockey, and the way you've done it, Tim, is just goes against everything you've been built upon the last 5 years. Your depth is winning you these games. Connor McDavid is killing penalties. You're playing defensive hockey. You're playing responsible hockey. You're not getting put out of position. You're not sacrificing defense for offense. It's the Evander Canes of the world, the Adam Henriques, the Kapanens, like you mentioned. They are the players that are doing the most damage. Corey Perry is our leading scorer, for Pete's sake. Like, it's, we are looking at the their whole breakdown of their goals. Yes, McDavid and Draisaitl have a lot of points. The majority of those are assists. And even when you watch the game, everybody's doing it. The first goal is Connor Brown hounding Whitecloud behind the net. Evander Kane coming in for a huge hit. Whitecloud has to hold up. Puck jumps out in front and Henrique just, it's a tap-in. He scored. It's a beautiful goal. And this carried its way throughout the game. And I don't know about you, but this level of effort, this level of passion, I don't remember seeing this in years past. Yeah, it was there in the Stanley Cup Finals versus the Florida Panthers. That was a hell of a series. But in the second round, this is a different team. And we all joked and we all criticized them for their offseason acquisitions. Oh, they're old. They're not working out. You know, they're going to get swept by the LA Kings when they're down 2-0. Maybe the vets are good. I mean, obviously, Jeff Skinner, not so much, but Connor Brown's playing great. Adam Henrique's playing great. Matthias Janmark is just a thorn in everybody's side. He's killing penalties. Trent Frederick showed up finally and played a little physical play with Hagee. That was great. All these pieces that they added, Tim, are starting to show the fruits of their acquisitions. It's nice to see. And then Jake Walman's playing fantastic too. So the defense is rounding out. Everything's starting to come up really, really solid for the Edmonton Oilers at the right time.
Yeah, and I was wrong about that. I think we thought on paper this Oilers team was worse than last year and has less depth. I feel like they last year was a kind of a peak of their depth of their roster when they struggled with it for years. Last year, everything looked good, and we thought this year was going to be a step back in that regard, and it hasn't been. And like you mentioned, like you get two goals from Adam Henrique. Connor McDavid is like eighth on the team in goals. It's just crazy. Evander Kane has been really good. This is we've been waiting years to see this version of Evander Kane in the playoffs. The Oilers fans, he has 7 points, 4 goals in his last 8 games. Like when he's rolling like this, it's hard to match up against that. And meanwhile, the Vegas Golden Knights aren't getting the depth scoring. And usually their bottom six is one of their strengths. But right now you have 1 point from Roy in the series. Dorofeev has 0 points. Howden has 0 points. Keegan Kolesar has 1 point. Tanner Pearson has 1 point. Like they're not contributing anything. And this is a total mismatch, which is not what I expected at all in the series.
Yeah, it's the Barbashev and Hurdle. Those two players, I feel like they could do a lot more. They get a lot of chances and they just aren't finishing. And I'm not blaming it on Stuart Skinner because Stuart Skinner is not a great goaltender. I just think these guys, they're just missing. For whatever reason, I don't know why. Sometimes you just get the yips and you can't score, whereas other times everything you shoot goes in the net. And I think right now it's just they can't find the back of the net. Like Barbashev gets the breakaway. If he scores that, it's a completely different game. Those little moments change the whole dynamic of the game, and he misses it. Stuart Skinner gets some confidence, and the Edmonton Oilers away we go. They win 3-0. So it's a great series. I think the Vegas Golden Knights are good, but what I'm seeing from the Edmonton Oilers is they're playing physical. They're asserting themselves. They're playing defensive-minded hockey. And this is a completely different Oilers team than I remember in years past. Even different from last year when they played the Panthers in the final. It's different. It feels different. And I disagree with you. I think they are worse on paper. I think those guys did not have a good season. I don't know if this will carry on throughout the rest of the playoffs. Maybe. But right now, today, May 13th, it's like, damn. This is good. Can this continue for the Western Conference Finals and the Stanley Cup Finals? I don't know. But boy, oh boy, it's right now my eye test is this is a hell of a team. Where were you all regular season? You weren't there. This wasn't the team, and maybe it's like Derek Stepan said, get to the playoffs, then we turn it on. We got a little scared from the Kings in the first 2 games, but now here we are.
I don't have any updates on Picard, but assume he comes back in the next week or so, and they're either, you know, it's game 6-7 or they're moving on to the second round. Does he get the net back if he's healthy, or does Skinner keep it till he loses it?
I think you stick with Skinner, even though he's still struggled. Like he gets a shutout. That's his second career playoff shutout, but he was your guy in the regular season. I think you stick with him. And then when he starts to falter, which he will, then you have Picard back and you throw him back in the net. Cause I think Picard is still undefeated. He hasn't lost yet. So it's nice to have that luxury. But in the hierarchy, Skinner's your starter. Picard's the backup. I think you go back to that. This was an easy transition for Knobloch. It worked out perfectly for him. Where it's like, okay, you're hurt. You take the next couple of days off. Let's ride this guy for a while. But we know we have you in our back pocket. And I'm sure he's had that conversation with Picard. But no, I don't see them going back in the playoffs. If a guy's playing good, if a guy's winning, you stick with him. The team doesn't want changes. They don't want a new goaltender. But yeah. That's my opinion. All right, moving on. Toronto. Florida Panthers. You're up 2-0, Tim. You're going to Florida up 2-0. I was going to say you're going home. No, you did what you needed to do. You won the first 2 games at home. Going away, you dominated the play. You imposed your will. You go to Florida. You're feeling pretty good. And why do the Leafs do this to us? Specifically Leafs fans, I think it's enjoyable because I picked Florida to make the Stanley Cup Finals. I think they're going to walk through. Now, once Tampa Bay was up, one of those two teams were making the Stanley Cup Finals, and now it's Florida. I was nervous. I was up all night pacing. I couldn't go to bed. I'm like, oh, what's happening? Toronto, they're a different team. They're a different team. And then something clicked. I was like, no, they're not. They're the same old Toronto Maple Leafs that we know and love. And sure enough, in Game 3, they lose. Game 4, they lose. But it's not a loss, Tim, that you feel good about it. It's not a loss that you can go, okay, we're okay. It's a best of 3. We're going home. We have home ice advantage. All we need to do is win 2 games at home. No. Game 4 was a loss that you go, what the hell are we doing? We have no hope. And when you have a roster made up of these superstars. It's criminal that they show up and lay an egg like they do. Yo, Austin Matthews is playing great. He's penalty killing. He's doing fantastic. He's really trying hard. The guy, Tim, needs to score goals. Oh, Mitch Marner, you know, he's doing so terrific. He needs to score goals. Johnny T, oh, he's doing great. He's such a veteran. He does everything right. Look at it. He wins in the faceoff. He just says, you can set your clock by it. He's so reliable. You have to score goals. Those are your big three. And they're just invisible. And that's why when I was pacing around at night at 2-3 in the morning, my mind was racing. I just felt a calm peaceness come over me. And I go, they'll choke. This is the Leafs we're talking about. They will not close this game out, this series. And sure enough, we're going back to Toronto for game 5, and they're tied 2-2. And the Florida Panthers have just ripped the heart out of Leafs Nation, which I enjoy. I enjoy watching Paul Bissonnette suffer. He leans into it really, really heavy. That's his shtick. I get that. But it's fun. It's fun to watch Steve Dangle just have a heart attack on YouTube. It's great because they deserve it. The Leafs just build you up, build you up, build you up. And then you talk down to people when you're up there. And then you go, no, this team sucks. They do. They inherently don't have what it takes. I talk about it all the time. You have that it factor. They do not have it, Tim. They don't. And it's not something that you can just learn. You have to get it beat into you. And they've been coddled and they've been protected. And now they don't have that leather skin that you need to, when times get tough. You know what I mean? Times get tough and these guys head for the hills. And that's what's happening here.
Yeah. And it seems like every year there's a little bit of a butt of like, okay, we didn't see the best from Matthews and Marner and all these other guys, but Nylander showed up. And Nylander's having a great playoffs. He's got 15 points, at least the team in goals. Like, he looks great. Matthew Nyes looks great just about every night. He's mucking it up. He's perfectly matched for this Florida team. Morgan Rielly has looked good and younger. Like, he's looked really good in the series, but it's not up to those guys. You need the superstars, and Nylander's one of them, sure, but you need the top two guys, and they're not doing it. And what's crazy is, like, okay, I know you want to talk about the power play, but one of the things I saw this morning, and I had to double check it because I see stuff on Twitter and I kind of make little notes of like, oh, I'll mention that on the show, whatever. I saw this one. I'm like, that can't possibly be true. I looked it up this morning. It's true. Games 3 and 4, which Toronto lost both of them. Mitch Marner had 0 shots on net in both of those games. 0.
He quarterbacks the power play.
And I know he's a pass first guy. He has a third of the shots in the playoff that Matthews has, 13-35. So, like, I know, like, shooting and being goal scoring isn't his thing. If you pulled up those stats of like the Maple Leafs record in the playoffs when Mitch Marner scores a goal, it's dominant. Like, he's so important to this team, and you can't even get a shot on net, pal, in 2 games. It's crazy. It's just crazy.
He's only got 13 shots. They've played 10 games.
Yeah.
That's terrible. You are the main cog on this team, and I'm a Mitch Marner fan. I think he's a great player. But for whatever reason, these guys sucked him when playoffs come. And it's okay for me to say that because I can back it up by the history. They do.
Is Marner the kind of guy where once you knock him out of the series, which based on the last 2 games, it seems like you have, can he come back in, or is he out now?
I think he's out. Don't you think? Don't you get that vibe that he doesn't have that looking in the mirror after the game and going, not this time. I'm coming back. He doesn't have that.
And what's poetic about it, too, is the comparison with him and Rantanen, who are both in for huge paydays this summer. And you have one player who's playing like a menace, like one of the best players on the planet, and the other is just shrinking. And you know, regardless, Marner's still going to ask for Rantanen money in July. And he's probably going to get it. But this is what you're going to get in the postseason.
Yeah, Rantanen signed the big ticket with Dallas, 96 mil. Marner's going to want $100 million over 8 years. That'll be his number. He wants that triple-digit number. It won't be with Toronto. But yeah, if I'm a GM and I'm looking at this guy, regular season, oh, terrific. Absolutely terrific. But do I want to invest in a guy like this where I know he's proven it to me? Year after year after year, they lose. They don't show up. They don't get points. They don't score in the playoffs. Austin Matthews is the one who should have the target on his back. And again, he's being protective. The Toronto media, the pundits. Well, he's trying to do this and that and the other. Now he kills penalties. He's exerting his effort there. They had four kills in the first period. All this, just excuses for this guy. He's just score the damn puck. That's all. He's getting chances. That's all you have to do. When you look around the league and you look at the other teams who are succeeding, what do they have in common? Their stars produce. Obviously, Mikko Rantanen's the low-hanging fruit. He's been doing it at an historical rates. But the Edmonton Oilers, I know McDavid's not scoring. He's still leading the team in points. Drysdale's right behind him. They're doing what they need to do. And the teams that are struggling, their stars aren't producing. The Washington Capitals, their stars aren't producing. The Vegas Golden Knights, their stars aren't producing. The Toronto Maple Leafs, their stars aren't producing. All those teams are losing. They all stink. Absolutely stink. Ovi, you stink. Eichel, Stone, you stink. Marner's, Matthews, you stink in the playoffs right now, today. Yes, someone's going to clip that and then they're going to get a hat trick. Oh, look what Scott said. Today, in this little bubble, they stink. And they have to do better. You have to do better or else you will lose. And that's okay to say.
Going back to last year, Auston Matthews has played 9 total career games in the second round and he has 0 goals in those 9 games.
Like, I don't even know those stats, Tim. I just watch the game. And you watch this team play and you go, where the hell is 34? Where is he? Because I sure as hell know where the big guys are. I know where Barkov is. He's noticeable. He's out there. But what? Yes, I see Matthews. I see him physically out there. But he doesn't make an impact like other players do. And that's the echelon he's in now, Tim. He's with the Rantanens and the McKinnons and the McDavids. That's his peer group. And when I watch the Oilers play, holy hell, do I see 29 and 97. And when I watch the Dallas Stars, I see 96 zipping around everywhere. Hell yeah, I do. When I watch the Leafs, I don't see him. I see Scott Laudon playing pretty good. I don't see Matthews.
So if I'm playing devil's advocate for a second, I think, okay, you know, it's a best of 3 series right now. You have some games at home. You are tied with this, the reigning cup champion, despite your top guys not producing and your power play not going. If one of those two things happens, all of a sudden it could be a different series. Could you have a positive spin on it that way?
Well, there's always a way to spin it. And that's what the coaches are doing. Craig Berube is just strategizing. How do we make a good out of this trip to Florida, which was absolutely terrible? Joseph Woll's playing fantastic. I think you can hang your hat on that. Your starter went down with an injury. Thank you, Sam Bennett. We didn't miss a beat. Joseph Woll is playing so incredibly good. I think that's what you hang your hat on. And you go, listen, guys, we have to do better. We were in these games. We almost won game 3. We played terrible in game 4, and we were a goal away from tying it for the majority of the game. So there are things you can work on, like you said, but the players know. The players know in the back of their mind, like, holy shit. Like, we are in trouble. Florida picked up their game, and Florida's one of those teams. There are very few teams that I've seen that can do this. They elevate their play. They get better. They can flip that switch, the whole team, where they go down 2-0 and they go, okay, now we need to go. And you can just tell they, top to bottom, they just play differently. Edmonton can do it too. Edmonton can flip that switch and just go supersonic hyper, and then everybody's on the same page, and it's just like, holy moly. Whoa, where were you this whole game? And all of a sudden, it's just an onslaught. Toronto can't do it. Florida has that ability, and they did it in game 4, where they just worked them, Tim, the whole entire game.
What's up, guys? Tim here. Listen, if you've been listening to the show for a while, then you know that I have an adopted rescue dog named Levi. He was around 6 when I got him. He's 8 now, and he's the sweetest and most loving companion you could ever hope to know. Dog owners know what I'm talking about. You want the best for your pets to help them live as happily and healthily as possible. That's why we partnered with The Farmer's Dog. The Farmer's Dog makes feeding real healthy dog food easy and convenient, and your dog will absolutely love it. Levi is obsessed, and he's been licking his bowl clean every day. The Farmer's Dog makes and delivers fresh, healthy dog food right to your door. It's developed by vets, nutritionally balanced, and made from real meat and veggies to the same safety standards of human food. A healthy diet isn't just important for people. It has all kinds of benefits for dogs, too. From healthier coat and skin, to better breath, even easier digestion. Levi's energy has been so much better since making the switch, and he looks forward to mealtime in a way that he never has before. The package came in and everything was personalized with Levi's name. I mean it when I say these guys love pets the same way that you do. And now you can join the movement and get 50% off your first box of fresh, healthy food at thefarmersdog.com/gloves. Plus, you get free shipping. Just go to thefarmersdog.com/gloves to get 50% off. That's thefarmersdog.com/gloves. So game five is tomorrow night on Wednesday, and game four obviously ended with that Domi hit on Barkov. There's a huge scramble, and there's, you know, Kachuk winking at Nylander saying, I'm going to get you. So this is, like we talked about at the top of the show, this is the type of series the Florida Panthers wants to play. Could you see this getting out of hand, or is it turning to Florida dominance, or what do you expect from the final couple of games here?
Getting out of hand in what way?
I don't know, more suspensions, fines, cheap hits, that sort of thing.
I think we'll see cheap hits. Absolutely. I love Max Domi. I think he's a great hit off the ice. He's a nut job a little bit. Like his wires cross and he crosses the line quite a bit. And that hit on Barkov is very dangerous. It could have went bad really, really quickly. Thankfully, Barkov had the wherewithal to lift his head up. Like you could have killed the guy. Like that's a dangerous spot to hit somebody. It was premeditated. He gets a fine, whatever, who cares? Yeah, I could see this spiraling. Toronto has the beef to stand up to Florida. And they have the guys who can instigate some stuff. But I think cooler heads will prevail. They have an extra day off between games. They don't play until Wednesday. So they've had time to cool off and realize, listen, this is game five. This is a pivotal game. Whoever wins this game, I think it's 80% of the time they win the series. You're not going to put your team in a hole. So Kachuk knows what he's doing. He did the little stupid wink. I'm coming to get you. He's not going to do anything. I don't think he puts himself out there. Everybody will be watching him. All eyes will be on him and Domi and Bennett and all these guys. So I think game five will be physical, but it'll be calculated. I don't see guys going out of their way to just put their team in a hole because it's a huge game. Toronto will be better. Florida will still try to assert themselves, but it's going to be a hell of a game. This is so fun to watch these games, Tim. Isn't it entertaining? It's just like, you cannot turn away. It's so fun.
Well, speaking of that, that's a perfect transition to the next series, which is just the opposite. And it's funny because I kind of felt bad how quickly we cover like the Carolina-Washington series and trying to come up with some interesting storylines or compelling, you know, subjects to talk about. And it's very difficult to do. And I look on social media and it's everyone. Like, it's not just us. Everyone's yawning through this series. And even the guys, the only ones who are getting, who are talking about it are the guys on the TV that are paid to talk about it. Except for, you know, the regional coverage and all that. But yeah, it's just been a pretty bland series. But Carolina won last night. They now lead this 3-1. And I think it's a good example of what you said, you know, the cream rising to the top here. But what have you seen so far in this one? What do you want to talk about?
I tell you what, Svechnikov's playing pretty good. I think coming in here, it was him and Ovechkin, the two Ruski goal scorers, and Svechnikov has played solid, whereas Ovechkin, it's time. You know what I mean? It's time. He had a great regular season. He was on that Russian medication that no one really knows what's in it. But he got to his goal of breaking Gretzky's record. He looks slow. John Carlson, he looks slow. Game three, it was almost sad. Turning the puck over, getting beat wide, directly leading to two goals for Carolina. It was, you know how I was criticizing Washington all season long? I'm like, how the hell are they doing this? I think their deficiencies are coming to light, where they're old in certain spots and slow in certain spots. And it's just, this is it. This is the team that I expected to play. And I'm not patting myself on the back, but Carolina's not a good team. Like they're not, let me rephrase that. They're not a great team. They're a very good team. But if you're in a series to potentially be in the final four teams in the NHL, I expect better. I expect better hockey from a semifinal series. Do you know what I mean? This is not what we deserve, but you have to give credit to the Carolina Hurricanes. much like the Florida Panthers have dragged Toronto into their mudslinging competition, the Carolina Hurricanes have turned this into a series that benefits them. It is tightly checked. It is zone to zone. They are smothering them in the offensive zone. They shoot the puck from everywhere. Washington's constantly on their heels. In the defensive zone, the Florida's track, the forwards track back so fast. So there's very rare there's an odd man rush. And if there is, it gets just squashed quickly. Because Carolina is just effort, effort, effort. Whether it's Sebastian Aho up top with Seth Jarvis or the Jordan Martinook in the fourth line, everybody plays the same way. And this is exactly what Rod Brindamore wanted to turn the series into. Low scoring, high shots, high energy level. If you can keep up with you, keep up with us, try. And they can't. Washington can't. And they have a great coach. I think Spencer Carberry is a very good coach. I think they have good pieces. Carolina is just a solid team top to bottom, whereas Washington, they don't have that superstar. They don't have that first line who you can go out and say, okay, we're going to score. Love Dylan Strome, played with them. I don't think he's a scary 1A. Love Ovi, played with them, played against them. He's not a scary first line winger anymore. You know what I mean? And Tom Wilson is doing what he can, but he's like 35 years old. I just think they don't have that extra gear like we talked about with the Panthers and the Oilers. They just don't. So it's unfortunate.
Do you think one of the things we always talk about with Carolina every year is just that, like, they're very, very good for a couple series, the regular season, but there's a ceiling on them just because of the way they play, because of the way their roster is structured, that they can't win the Eastern Conference Finals or the Stanley Cup at that rate. Do you feel like that's still true this year, or is anything different about this team that you think they could give Florida or Toronto a run next round?
No, listen, they've had a charmed run in this playoffs. They got to play an AHL. They played the Albany Devils in the first round when they got the New Jersey Devils. Like, let's just not go too far with these Hurricanes. As far as getting to the Eastern Conference Finals, they've had the easiest road that I've ever seen in my whole life. First round was a glorified bye when they played the New Jersey Devils. Then you play a Washington Capitals team that is just old and not worthy of being in the second round at all. It is the crappiest bottom tier of a bracket that I've ever seen, with Montreal, Washington, New Jersey, and Carolina. Whereas the top half of the bracket, are you kidding me? It was Florida, Ottawa, Toronto, and Tampa Bay. Like, are you nuts? How that worked out that way, where the top half was so heavy and the bottom half was just so garbage. If you put Ottawa in the bottom half of that bracket, I think Ottawa makes Eastern Conference Finals. Any of the four teams up top, I think they walk through these four teams. And that is all disrespect. And you know how people say no disrespect? 100% disrespect to all these teams. I mean that disrespectfully. All four teams in the top half of that bracket would have walked through the bottom four teams. No problem. You tell me Toronto, Ottawa over Carolina? Tampa. I think Ottawa would have, 100%. Yep. I think they would have. Okay. They would have. Maybe not. Ottawa wouldn't have walked through, but I think they would have gotten through. I think the other three teams definitely would have walked through 100%. But yeah, it's just unfortunate. Out of the other three series happening, this one is just like, But you got to give Carolina some credit. They're doing what they need to do. They're winning games. They're going to make the Eastern Conference Finals. And it'll be funny, whoever comes out of Florida, Toronto, it'll be like a bye week to go to the finals. You'll be like, oh, this will be fun. We can rest some players. You know, we can say, you know, if Florida gets through, Matthew, we're going to sit you the first couple games. Get you ready for the finals. Just make sure you're not too worn out. Ekblad, you go take some more steroids. Get ready for the finals. Oh, but I didn't mean to. I didn't mean to, of course. Guy's been in the league for, a million years? Okay. All right, moving on. The last series. Arguably the two best teams in the NHL, maybe. President's Trophy winner, the team that went out at the deadline and just nailed it with a Mikko Rantanen trade and are primed and ready for a Stanley Cup championship they haven't had in a while in the Dallas Stars. They played game three. And what a game it was. Winnipeg would have liked to win this game, but they didn't. Dallas came out, and it's the Mikko Rantanen show. Much like the last six games. What has he been doing? Like, what? He's been eating his Wheaties.
Yeah, it's hard to talk about this series without spending all this time on Rantanen. Another 3-point night in game three. He has 17 points in his last six games, 9 goals, 2 hat tricks, 2 game-winning goals. He's the first player in NHL history with a hat trick in third period of game seven. First player in NHL history with 4-point periods in back-to-back games. Like, this is just crazy what he's doing. And part of it was like, okay, maybe he was kind of coming up against the Avalanche's former team to prove the doubters wrong, to get the final word, but he's continued that right away. And one of the things we talked about is like, are you nervous at all about other Stars players not super producing? It's like, no, they're going to be fine. And eventually Rantanen's going to slow down a little bit, but then, you know, like these other guys will step up. Robinson will step up, Rupe Hintz, whatever. So Wyatt Johnston, we're all playing pretty well. So yeah, I think this team looks really good. I had Dallas, you know, headed to the Western Conference Finals, and I'm sticking by it.
Connor Hellebuck stinks. Let's add him to the list of players that stinky. Gives up another five. This guy, Tim, what the hell goes on with him?
Yes, but he also had a shutout in game two.
At home.
So, okay, but are you nervous about that, or like, do you just take that with, as it comes?
I think you just have to just do with it what it is. Like, he's just a bad goalie on the road. I don't know what happens when he goes on the road, but boy, oh boy, he absolutely stinks. And I'm not saying all the goals are his fault, but he looks off. He doesn't look confident. He doesn't look like the Connor Hellebuyck that we know and love in the regular season. Doesn't it seem to me that his angles are off? He's not out of his blue. He doesn't battle for pucks either. And that's the thing that strikes me. When Dallas gets those second chance goals, Hellebuyck just kind of is standing there or kneeling and watching. He's not diving. He's not putting that extra effort. He's not battling. And that's the part that worries me, where I think it's gotten to him a little bit, where he's like, dang it, they're going to score. He's expecting them to score. Whereas other goalies are like, you ain't getting the puck past the line, man. I'm battling every second.
Well, one of the things, so first, obviously last year was horrible. The first round of this year was pretty horrible, although he managed to get the game seven win. He even said after that game, like, he was a huge monkey off his back, just a huge relief. No one's happier than him. And maybe you get that table turned. Game one, three goals. It's like, okay, not great, but it's a really good Dallas team. Game two, shutout. Okay, maybe this is a different Hellebuyck. Game three, five goals. So now you start to get nervous. I think game four is going to be so important tonight. Not just for the series, but for Hellebuck's confidence and just who is he? Because if he can come back with another, you know, even if he loses, but it's like two goals against, okay, maybe you can come back and maybe he's still an elite goalie in the playoffs and he's turned a corner. But if he lets in another four or five goals, that's his legacy forever and there's no changing it.
Well, he has to do a lot. He has to win a Stanley Cup to change that legacy, because he's been terrible in the playoffs. But yeah, the difference between the first series was they won the first two games. At home. They lost game one to Dallas. So they need to win this game. You can't go down 3-1 to a good team in the playoffs. It's very, very hard to come back. And that game they lost 3-2, he only faced 24 shots.
Right.
So it's not like these Winnipeg Jets are just giving up high grade chances all the time and he's getting 30, 40 shots against. They know their deficiency. They know who Connor Hellebuyck is. And they are doing everything they can to protect him. The game he got a shutout, he faced 21 shots. It's seven shots a period. And the majority of those shots are not grade A chances. So the Jets are doing their job. Hellebuyck, I'm telling you, it's so mental. I don't know the answer. If I did, I'd be a millionaire. But he stinks. Absolutely stinks. And I don't think the Jets can come back from this. I think Rantanen and the Dallas Stars... That's going to be a hell of a series, them versus the Oilers in the Western Conference Finals. That will be incredible to watch. But yeah, I've been wrong before, but boy, they look good.
Well, as a coach for the Jets or any team who's playing against a white hot star right now, like Rantanen is, I feel like human instinct is to start game planning against that guy. Like, how do we stop him from doing that every night? Well, as a coach, you probably can't do that because there's still 19 other guys on the roster. Like, you still have to worry about the Wyatt Johnsons and Hintz and Robertsons of the world. Like, what do you do if you're the coach of the Jets? If you're Scott Arneal, how do you stop this?
You don't. You can't match lines because Dallas is at home now, so it's hard to get your preferred pairing out against them. But you have to challenge your team. You have to say, we have to stop this guy. We have to be better, whether it's Kyle Connor and Nicholas Ehlers or Perfetti or Vilardi, whoever is out there against him, you have to slow him down. But I just don't see it happening. I really, really don't. And I think the main issue for the Winnipeg Jets is their defense. Josh Morrissey played terrific. He really, really did coming back from that injuries in game two. He was okay in game three. But other than that, Tim, like, Neil Pionk is good. DeMello is a journeyman guy. Sandberg is, it's just like a bunch of good players. When you get to this time of year, and you're playing a Dallas Stars lineup that can roll out a Hintz, Duchesne, Johnson for the first three center, then your wingers are just, they have a deep team. Jason Robertson's on their third line. It's tough. And I don't think they have the horses that can slow down these guys. But yeah, to your point, you just try to, much like you can't slow down McDavid, you can't slow down these high-end guys. You just try to limit their chances because they will get them. We just try to limit them. But you can't game plan versus one player because then everybody wakes up and it's like, oh, Jamie Benn's got two, or Tyler Seguin's got two, or Wyatt Johnson, like he did, has two. So it's just, it's a double-edged sword. But yeah, it's sad. Every single year they do it to us, much like Toronto Maple Leafs. They build us up, and then you stink. It's just not happening.
The last thing on the series I mentioned is that Miro Heiskanen has not been back yet, but Pete DeBoer still stands by his belief that he will return at some point in the second round. So maybe we see him tonight, or maybe it's later in the series, but hopefully we do.
Gosh, that'd be Thomas Harley's been playing really, really good hockey. Imagine getting him back.
He's a good defender, yeah.
Oh, he's very, very good. Let's just talk about the Mason Marshman, a little slash on the referee here.
Sure.
The kid should get suspended, 100%. I don't know why he wasn't. I don't know why there's no supplementary investigation into this. You can't do that. I don't know why he's not getting suspended or fined, or maybe he got fined. I didn't see it, but he should get at least one game for that. You can't do that. You can't touch an official. Yes, it was just a whole hum slash on the legs, but he's frustrated. He's screaming at the ref and he hits him with a stick. You're setting a bad precedent. If George Parros does a shitty job at this, I'm sorry. He is not good at this. He needs to do better. It bothers me. Give him a suspension. That's one, like, that should not be tolerable. I don't care if it's light. I don't care if it's heavy. If you touch the referee in that manner, when you're frustrated and you're trying to get his attention, or you're hitting him, you're hitting him. A suspension, right? It should be black and white. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it.
Yeah, I agree. Obviously, it wasn't going to hurt him. He wasn't intending to hurt him. It didn't hurt, but you're right. It's a respect thing. It's a precedent thing. You don't touch the ref in those moments.
I apologize for cussing. I think that's my second one. I'm getting fired up this episode. This is uncharacteristic. So yeah, we'll have to do better next time, but let's do some quick hits here, Tim, and get out of here.
Yeah, one of the things that we saw just last night was all indications that the LA Kings are closing in on Ken Holland as their next GM.
Is he a young guy from the AHL they're going to give a chance to?
Yeah, MIT graduate. He's been an assistant for 20 years now. He's served his time. He's ready for that big job, and he's looking good.
It's exciting. It's nice to see them just going outside the box a little bit and just promoting somebody who deserves it by their merit, not just digging into the barrel of the old trash heap. Who's left? Who's the GM that we can grab that's not, you know, currently got a job? Just kidding. This is Ken Holland. Like, this guy's been around the block. He couldn't cut in a different team. Edmonton ran him out of town. Detroit ran him out of town. Oh, you know, he's going to change things up in LA. It's just like same old thing. The old boy.
They're going to hire Lou Lamoriello as the president and
special advisor to the president. Yeah. It's a joke. It's an absolute joke these days. Why? Like, can we not do better? Can we not find somebody else? I guess that someone else was Kyle Dubas for the Toronto Maple Leafs, and look how that ended up. So I guess there's something to be said about the old boys club. All right, what else, Tim?
Yeah, this just came out a few minutes ago. Darren Dreger said, quote, strong indication this week, Rick Tocchet will soon land another NHL head coaching job. Philly, Boston, Seattle, believed to be among the top contenders. The Flyers want to be aggressive, good fit.
I think all those would be great fits for him. I think Philly would be well suited. Boston would be a good team, in Seattle, obviously. Anaheim jobs off the market. Joel Quenneville signs there. We're going to stay away from that as far as we can. But yeah, Rick Tocchet's a great coach. Obviously, Vancouver wanted to sign him. He turned down 25 schmil over 5 years. So he will be a coveted coach in the market. Whereas much like the GM search, it's just like, put your hand in the hopper and see what ball you come out with. Oh, I got Peter Laviolette now. It's my turn. So Rick Tocchet is a good coach. He'll do well in whatever team he goes to.
Yeah, but doesn't it tough for Vancouver that he's going to get another job right away? Where you know, like you break up with a girl, say, I'm just not ready to date right now. And then you have a new girlfriend 5 days later and you're posting on Instagram. Like that's what the hockey version of this is.
What was the coach, Tim, that got fired and then the team fired their current coach to hire him? It was the St. Louis Blues.
Montgomery.
Like that's even worse.
Yeah.
But I cut you up. What were you going
to
say?
No, it just stings a little bit if you're a Canucks fan. He's going to take another job right away because he wants the coach, just not your team.
It'd be like a team firing a coach and he goes and wins the Stanley Cup the next year.
Yeah. But has that ever happened?
Like Bruce Cassidy.
I don't, who is that?
Yeah.
You keep mentioning that name. I don't know who that is.
Can we dump on Steve Yzerman real quick? Yeah. Did they have a coach yet or no? What's their status in their coaching?
Are the Maple Leafs ever going to win the Stanley Cup? You know, it's like, come on.
No, it's just, it is what it is. All right, everybody. Thank you for listening. We appreciate the support. Have some fun watching hockey. We'll talk to you guys later this week. Cheers.
Spend £200 million. I'm Sorrel and I'm back for season 2 of the insanely lavish Rich Beyond My Wildest Dreams podcast, where hilarious guests get their hands on an imaginary £200 million jackpot on Euro Millions from the National Lottery.
I would buy tickets to go and see Backstreet Boys in the Sphere. I'd buy the Sphere? What are we talking about?
The bougier, the better.
Turned into a lunatic with all this money.
Flat Europe. So get ready for confetti cannons, champagne, giant checks, and some of the most outrageous ways a person could possibly spend a £200 million fortune.
Jacuzzi karaoke.
Jacuzzi
karaoke.
You can get that Euro Millions feeling every Friday by searching for Rich Beyond My Wildest Dreams on all podcasting apps, YouTube, Instagram, and TikTok.